Good afternoon. Happy Friday to you. John McGinnis with you. News Radio KFBK. Hope you're having a great day. A bunch of things going on in the news, one of which is breaking news, just developing out of Illinois. We'll talk about that. Also, work on our way at the California legislature. It's another effort to get people out of custody, to push people out of the prisons in the state of California. Something known as the felony murder rule is being challenged by the California legislature and one member there in particular. We'll talk about that as we work our way through the program. I'll give you greater details on it if you're not familiar with the concept. People who engage in certain violent, felonious conduct, certain enumerated crimes in which there is a likelihood of the activity resulting in death or great bodily harm, well, death in particular in this case, can be held responsible for consequences of first-degree murder if somebody dies as a result of that crime, even if the defendant did not take the life of the victim. We'll get into that as we work our way through the program. But I want to go to Illinois first, where it appears at first blush as though the Sanctuary City crowd had a bit of a victory in the courts today. But I actually anticipated it would come this way. I'm not surprised by it at all. And I emphasize this is for now, which is exactly how the CBS News article on this particular topic starts out. For now, Attorney General Jeff Sessions can't follow through with his threat to withhold public safety grant money to Chicago and other so-called sanctuary cities for refusing to impose new tough immigration policies. That's according to a federal judge just announced today. In a legal defeat, at least for the time being, of the administration's efforts to rein in and can take control of the immigration problem in the country. In what is at least a temporary victory for cities that have defied Sessions, U.S. District Judge Harry Leinenweber ruled that the Justice Department could not impose the requirements. He said the city had shown a, quote, likelihood of success, end quote, in arguing that Sessions exceeded his authority with new conditions. And I think that's a critical part of this. Among them are requirements that cities notify immigration agents when someone in the country illegally is about to be released from local jails and to allow agents access to the jail. The city had asked the judge for a nationwide temporary injunction this week, asking the judge not to allow the Justice Department to impose the requirements until the city's lawsuit against the department plays out in court. After the ruling, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel said that the ruling was, quote, a clear statement by the judge that, quote, the Trump administration is wrong. He said that the Justice Department's policy, if implemented, would be a driving wedge between the immigrant community and the police department. I disagree with that, and I'll tell you why. And that effectively, the Justice Department was asking cities to, quote, abandon the principle of community policing, end quote. Emanuel argued that the conditions set by Sessions would deny communities resources that would only enhance their ability to keep their residents safe. City officials have said such a ruling would prevent the Justice Department from withholding what are called Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Award assistance grants. Byrne grants are very, very, very commonly used by jurisdictions all over the country. For law enforcement funding. I have applied for, been awarded, and administered many Byrne grants over the years. And it's an effective part of policing a local environment and taking advantage of those resources. Chicago has applied for $2.2 million in the federal grant money, $1.5 million for the city and the rest for Cook County and 10 other suburbs. But in a recent court hearing, attorneys representing the city said that more than 30 other jurisdictions across the United States filed court briefs supporting Chicago's lawsuit and have up to $35 million in grants at stake. At least seven cities and counties, including Seattle, San Francisco, as well as the state of California, are refusing to cooperate with the new, and again, that's a key term, the new federal rules. Through the $1.5 million in this particular case, the city of Chicago has the opportunity to do some unique things. That's what they wanted to do. Their effectiveness has been questioned, that is to say the Chicago Police Department, because of the exploding crime rate, violent crime rate there, particularly in South and Southwest Chicago. This represents for Chicago and the city therein a fraction of the city's budget. The ruling could be a major victory for a city that has been in a public fight with Sessions for some time. Mr. Emanuel has said the city would, quote, not be blackmailed into changing its values as a city welcoming of immigrants. And Mr. Sessions has responded that the Trump administration would not, quote, simply give away grant money to city governments that proudly violate the rule of law and protect criminal aliens at the expense of public safety. Well, here's my assessment on this. When this came up, I frankly anticipated that this would likely come this way. And I think the reason for it is these grants are in place. They have been awarded to the city of Chicago and to Seattle and San Francisco and the state of California and other jurisdictions, respectively. And the ability to impose greater restrictions midstream once the grants have been awarded, I think is very, very difficult. That's one thing. So I'm not surprised by it, frankly. The other part of it is some of the specific language where there's a direction that a person suspected of being an illegal alien would be held for a substantial period of time. I think it's 48 hours until ICE could get there. That simply, I think, creates a big challenge for the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. So my sense is that for the grants already received by various jurisdictions, this ultimately, I will not be at all surprised if this doesn't change. That is to say, I think it's going to stay the same, but it's likely to stay the same. As you look forward to grants that have yet to be awarded, I can anticipate that there will be very, very tight, specific language in the grants that will call for specific compliance. And my hope is that the compliance would be, I should say the language would be very carefully crafted to ensure that the conditions to be met by the local jurisdictions are within the law. Because the ability to hold somebody suspected of being in the country illegally is a tough one. If there's a warrant in the system for a person who's in that category, that's one thing. Then they can be held. But if it's simply suspicion on the part of a local government who has no authority to enforce immigration law, state or local government, then you've got, I think, a real significant challenge with it. So my sense is the Justice Department in future grants will choose the verbiage with this in mind. And I believe for the future, it'll be a matter of the grants not being awarded unless there is an agreement for compliance, a condition precedent to the issuance of the grant, and that if the terms of that grant are not met, then it's very reasonable at that point that those funds could be called back. But when you have money that has already been disseminated, it's already in city, county, and state budgets across the land without such tight restrictions, I think it's difficult, very, very difficult. Plus, the specific language in which there's an expectation that people be held with questionable authority to do so, and you have jurisdictions that want to not comply, I think that gives them what they need to challenge it legally, and that's a problem that's got to be addressed and overcome. In terms of the spirit of it, I think it's very, very reasonable that if federal grant monies are going to go to local jurisdictions, reasonable restrictions can be applied, and that compliance with those restrictions is an absolute condition of issuance, of granting of the grant, and that those monies can be called back if, in fact, compliance is not the reality once the money's received. I think that's very, very, very straightforward, and my sense is that is ultimately how this will be fixed. As for this particular judge, Harry Leinenweber, he looks to be a pretty good guy to me. Everything about him, he was appointed initially to the court by President Reagan, and I think he looked at this and said, this is a matter of dollars that have been awarded to local jurisdictions without any such restrictions in place, at least not tight restrictions, and therefore you can't tighten the restrictions or create new restrictions when the money is already in the local community. And my sense is that coupled with the fact that there's some ambiguity in terms of the length of time that somebody could be held simply on suspicion of being an illegal immigrant when the local authority has no real legitimate authority over enforcement of immigration law. You got thoughts on it? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. Much more conversation to come. Don't go away.
Sacramento's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. Happy Friday to you. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. There's going to be a lot of, I think a lot of gnashing of hands and teeth on one side of the aisle and a lot of celebration on the other. I think both are premature. The federal court in Illinois has said that no, Mr. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, you cannot you cannot get the funds back that have been administered through the burn grants to local jurisdictions who choose to function as sanctuary cities. However, I think the solution is, going forward, the language in those grants has to be specifically spelled out to address that. There's a history on this kind of withholding of funds. If you remember back to the days of the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, when it was compliance was just non-existent, I think in certainly in 48 of the 50 states, if not all 50 states, nonetheless, because there was a threat to withhold federal funds, highway funds, from those states that were not in compliance with that 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, the law stood. And there's other, many others as well. A lot of education grants that call for a drug-free environment in which the education grants are administered, which I think could be problematic for some of the states now that have legalized that, which is still clearly prohibited by federal law, possession and use of marijuana. So I think the potential certainly is there. You can, the language can address it. But as the language is developed and put in place, I think it needs to there needs to be an abundance of effort to make sure that no state or local jurisdiction is asked to hold people in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. In other words, those people who are incarcerating people for violation of state law or local law simply do not have the authority to detain somebody on a suspicion of immigration law. Detainers really are, there's question as to whether or not a detainer is sufficient to keep a person locked up. A warrant's another story. That's a directive from the court to detain them. So I think a combination of work from Congress and clear language in the grant as it's proposed and as it's agreed to by the receiving entity will address this. I think it's eminently fixable. And again, the judge that decided this has a good background and does not seem to be an ideologue, certainly not one that would be sympathetic to political persuasion from the left. Let's get your call, shall we? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. Dave in American Canyon, good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the conversation, and thank you for holding on.
Good afternoon, Sheriff. Happy to hear your voice again every day. That's
thank you,
good
sir.
For America. Good
thank
for
you,
us,
sir.
Anyways.
Well, you're a nice man.
Well, thank you, but it's true. As to what happened in Chicago, I agree with you completely. You know, it's basically with a grant. It is not an obligation of the person giving the grant. The money is given for a certain purpose.
Right.
Fine. You want those purposes to be followed? Fine. Make certain you understand what the purpose is and they understand it. However, here's one of the things that I think was really great, because the glorious state legislature of our wonderful state,
yeah,
they just basically passed what is in effect a sanctuary city,
yep,
bill.
And state.
I think what is going to be exciting to watch is the results that are going to happen, because I do believe that in many other states, when this information becomes generally public through available through the Spanish radio, TV stations, newspapers, and just on the regular news and everything, many people will be advised by law enforcement that should they leave the state now, no one's going to go after them, providing they go to California.
Yeah.
And by the way, don't ever come back here to whatever state they're from.
Yeah.
And they'll be okay. Now, what this is going to mean is you're going to have all kinds of brand new neighbors. And unfortunately, many of the people in the legislature, in my opinion, are going to have a whole lot of brand new voters as well.
Well, I think you're right, and I also believe that this represents, frankly, a void, a dearth of leadership in the jurisdictions where this there's confusion on this, because the reality is the state of affairs with the law today is state and local law enforcement officers do not in any of the 50 states have the authority to enforce immigration laws. They don't. That was a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court back in the Arizona challenge with SB 1070. So why do the leaders in the state of California and the cities throughout the state not simply tell their constituents, if you're a victim of a crime, if you're a witness to a crime, the police are not going to detain you for being in the country illegally? Whether that's the will or not, they simply cannot do it and it won't happen. So tell the truth. And these concerns about creating these sanctuary communities, I think, could be overcome with that very, very easily. They need not be concerned. I appreciate the call very much and the kind words. We're going to take care of some other business, and we'll be back with more after this. Don't go away.
Should the name of a remote mountain peak in Nevada named after a Confederate leader be changed instead to honor an escaped slave? That story comes your way Monday morning on the KFBK Morning News.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. By the way, in the context of all of this conversation about the sanctuary cities, of course, the legislature has ostensibly cleared the path for the governor to sign SB 54 into law. He has indicated in recent days that that he's okay with it because of some of the modifications that have been made. Some of what we've been discussing about the potential for grants to be withheld, I think, is a very, very, very serious part of the problem. Plus, the language within SB 54 is so incredibly burdensome in terms of even communicating with federal immigration personnel. And I think it's worthy of note that before the governor would indicate his support for it, the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation has been specifically excluded from it. So it only applies to local jail facilities in terms of the inmate component. And it leaves the sheriffs in the state of California primarily, but those cities and others that run local jails in the same position of having somebody slip through the cracks because of this law and then go on to commit horrific crimes. Is there a history of that? Of course there is. Of course there is. A high-profile history of that. So it puts the people responsible for the administration of those jail facilities in a very, very bad way. And I can't for the life of me understand the rationale represented by carving the State Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation out of it, because it makes no sense whatsoever. First of all, nobody is booked into their facilities as a first stop. You don't take a mass murderer and book them into San Quentin Prison. They go to a local jail facility where they stand trial. And upon conviction, then they're transferred to a state correctional facility. That's how it works. So by that time, they've been vetted to the extent they're going to be. Yet the ability to vet people temporarily held in local jails is now going to go by the wayside, it appears. So that's one we'll watch. We'll see what happens with it. I think it will absolutely harm the state of California in the long run. And ironically, I think it hurts the immigrant community. Because it keeps the likelihood, I believe, that people will be in the shadows and be exploited simply because of who they are. And I find that to be reprehensible and heartless. In other news, another bold step on the part of the California legislature. Just yesterday, the California State Assembly passed Senate Concurrent Resolution 48. This is authored by Senator Nancy Skinner, a Democrat from Berkeley. Senate Resolution, Concurrent Resolution 48, renews the legislature's intent to reform the felony murder rule. The opinion therein is that due to the felony murder rule, California has many inmates serving life sentences for first-degree murder, despite the fact that they did not actually commit a murder, stated Senator Skinner. She says SCR 48 recognizes that punishment should be proportionate to the actual crime. Under the felony murder rule, an individual who was, for example, driving the getaway car or present at the scene but was unaware that a killing would take place, or who was in the same circumstance but an unintentional or accidental killing occurred, can be charged with a first-degree murder. The United States is the only country in the world to still use the felony murder rule. The states of Kentucky, Ohio, Hawaii, Michigan have eliminated the felony rule from their statutes. That's a little bit of a misleading description of what the felony murder rule is. She opines that it's time to rethink the felony murder rule, which crudely gives an unarmed robber or a getaway driver the same sentence as the person who pulls the trigger. Not entirely true. To uphold justice, policymakers must review this law, its flaws, and its unintended consequences, so says Senator Skinner. One of the bill's sponsors is hashtag Cut50, which is a national bipartisan effort to reduce the number of people in our prisons and jails while making our communities safer. I would venture to say that that is a bit of a conflicting message. And just to kind of set the record straight, this is not any and all felonies that that trigger this felony murder rule. And in fact, there have been cases in which the felony murder rule was sought by a prosecutor, and the court, ultimately the state Supreme Court, said no. And I understand why they did. I think their rationale and their decision was defensible. That is to say, the Supreme Court's. The prosecutors also have, in the course of their quasi-judicial responsibility, the ability to weigh the facts and make a determination as to whether or not it fits, whether it's appropriate. It's not any and all felonies. It's not somebody who is innocently standing by not knowing that a murder was going to be committed. It's got to be somebody who is playing a part in certain specific enumerated felonies, to wit, arson, rape and other sexual crimes, carjacking, robbery, burglary, mayhem, kidnapping, train wrecking is still in there, and any homicide committed by intentionally firing a gun from a motor vehicle at a person outside of the motor vehicle with the intention to cause death. That's a pretty tightly constricted list of crimes. And the basis for this goes back to common law. And the basis is that there is an element of foreseeability when you engage in certain kinds of misconduct. But there's a case where, again, I think the judicial process worked okay. It worked effectively. This goes back to March of 2013 when the California Supreme Court held in People versus Wilkins in the case, this was a burglary case. And the felony murder rule was sought, but the court rejected that. Because Mr. Wilkins had committed a burglary, which, again, it qualifies, but a burglary typically would be a burglary of an occupied dwelling. So somebody breaks into your home when you're asleep at night and causes your death or some other innocent person to occur. Or two burglars come in and one of them is killed by the victim. Then the felony murder rule could be charged there as well. In this particular case, on the way home from the burglary, unsecured items, loot from the burglary, fell from the defendant's pickup truck, causing another driver to swerve and become involved in a fatal collision. Now, the court set aside that conviction, which had been upheld by the Court of Appeals, reaffirming the escape rule, in which a defendant is deemed to have completed the burglary when he escapes from the scene, is no longer being chased, and has unchallenged possession of the property. So think about it. In this particular case, with the existing felony murder rule, Wilkins had committed the burglary, fled the scene, and it was his erratic, unsafe behavior as he fled that caused a traffic collision that killed an innocent person. But the court said, no, that is not consistent with the legislative intent of the felony murder rule that calls for an element of foreseeability that a crime would occur. Is a traffic collision caused by property falling out of a truck foreseeable consequence of a burglary? The court felt not. But if a robbery victim arms themselves and shoots at the suspect who's armed or appears to be armed and kills an innocent person unintentionally, yeah, that's the burden, that's the responsibility of persons who have agreed to commit one of the certain specifically enumerated violent felony crimes. I think the state of California is better off with these people in custody as first-degree murderers when they do that. And the idea is to minimize the likelihood that people will become involved. A person stealing the same amount of money from a cash register, an unattended cash register at a convenience store, is not as big a threat to the safety of the public as somebody who arms themselves and commits a robbery to get the same loot, to actually exact the same thing from the victim, but in a dangerous, volatile and manner likely to produce death or great bodily injury. That's the rule. But I think it just makes an abundance of sense. So it's obvious to me that Senator Skinner and others still want to see the release of more inmates from custody. People who have engaged in conduct that is prohibited by law with specifically identified consequences for that type of behavior. They've been through due process, convicted, and the goal is to push them out onto the street. Is there a foreseeability that they're going to offend in the same or similar way when they're released? I think history says yes. You got thoughts on it? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. More conversation coming up after this. Don't go away.
More reporters on the scene covering more local stories. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. Man, I was going to try to get to calls, but it's not going to happen today. We got. I just want to wrap up with some other thoughts and some observations about SB 54, which, again, was just announced as we started the program today, that this very closely watched bill to prevent local and state police from taking part in federal immigration enforcement passed the California Assembly on the final day of the legislative session, one of its final hurdles before becoming law. And as I say that, that statement just really illustrates the lack of need for this. Because the idea, the stated purpose is to prevent local and state police from taking part in federal immigration enforcement. State and local police do not take part in federal immigration enforcement. They don't. They're not allowed to. If there's any question about that, look at the Supreme Court decision regarding Arizona SB 1070. It made it clear. So why would the leaders in the state of California not simply communicate that to people who otherwise would be fearful? So goes the emotional testimony that people are afraid of being targeted by local police because they're illegally in the country. And I understand, I can hear people saying, well, if they're illegally in the country, they should fear the police. I understand that idea too. But it's not the purview of state and local law enforcement. That is clearly the purview of the federal government, the ICE folks, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And again, there was in my time, there has never been any active participation on the part of local law enforcement to engage with enforcing immigration law. Never even so much as an inquiry of somebody who's a victim of a crime, a witness to a crime, or even a suspect in a criminal act. Now, if a person is booked into jail, and there's a handful of jails in the state, larger jails in the state, to include Sacramento County, where ICE personnel are there on a regular basis, and they monitor the comings and goings, and they can engage if they identify somebody that they have reason to believe is in the country illegally, that is in custody for some other crime, not booked on an immigration violation, then they can take custody of that person. It looks to me as though SB 54 will make that very, very difficult to continue. The way I read SB 54, they would not be allowed to set up any kind of a facility. They would be denied accommodation in a jail facility. And again, as you look at the application for and issuance awards of federal grants for law enforcement, which are a big part of policing the state of California, a big part of it. There's times in Sacramento County where there were more than 300, I don't know what the count is now, but more than 300 federally grant-funded officer positions enforcing the laws in Sacramento County, state and local laws. So all of that could be very much in jeopardy, and it now goes, ultimately, it looks as though it's going to, after it clears the Senate again, it will go back to the governor for his signature. He's got till October to make that decision. We'll watch it and see what happens, but it's, I think, more of a harbinger of the things to come. Hey, that's it for me, as you can tell by the sound of music, but stick around. A lovely and talented Kenny O'Neill is coming up next with the afternoon news. I will be back with you next week. Have a great weekend. So long.